Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Welcome to Advanced. Today, we're going to talk about laptops for all kids. It's a technology article, so stay tuned and learn together with us. So all of you who are listening in today, we have a good panelist with us in our advanced class, and we're on page 18 of the magazine, and we're going to talk about laptops. They're very popular all over the world. And as for panelists today, we have one of our panelists, Josh. How are you today, Josh?
I'm great, Doris. Nice to be here.
And we have some other people who we like to have with us when we can. We have the editor of our Let's Talk magazine.
Hello, I'm Joanna.
Joanna, do you like to be in advance for a change? It's different from Let's Talk.
I love it.
Good. Well, we're glad you could be with us today. And then we have a guest with us. And we often tell our guests to join us in the program because people like to hear from them too, don't they?
They sure do. They love to meet new people.
Hi, my name is Lindy.
Lindy, you're Lindy Nelson, right?
That's right.
And the name Nelson reminds me of some people that were in Taiwan many years ago with me, Fred and Blanche Nelson. And they are your grandparents. Wow. Just think of that.
Wow.
That's right.
Oh, they would be happy to have you be with Auntie Doris in the classroom.
Huh? That's right.
In fact, I taught her father the trumpet when he was a little boy.
Oh, wow.
In Hualien. Isn't that something?
What a small world. Welcome back. Is this your first visit?
This is my first visit to Taiwan,
What do you think? It's pretty nice, huh?
Oh, yeah. I've been well received by a lot of friends and family who knew my family.
Yeah, that's good. Well, you know, you're teaching English now in China. Where are you teaching?
I'm in Henan,
Central
China.
What school?
I'm actually at Xias University. It's in Xinjiang, and it's close to Zhengzhou.
So how long have you been there?
I am at a year and a half mark.
Wow, so you enjoy Chinese things?
Mm-hmm. I love
that's
China.
Good. And she's visiting us here at our studio classroom, and we're so glad she can join us today.
Yes, welcome.
So we're going to talk about laptops. I would like to ask you, Lindy, do you notice whether many people have laptops over there where you're from in China?
I have to say that actually a lot of my students don't have laptops.
But I think they're getting more and more. I've heard about a big campaign for people to get laptops or some kind of a device that they can study on in the classroom. But it takes time and money, doesn't it?
It does. I think most classrooms in the States still have desktop computers where the computers can't be as easily moved around from classroom to classroom.
Yeah, but you know, Asia's going ahead now in this technology thing. And I think we have a lot of things that the kids in America don't even have nowadays, Josh.
I agree.
So we're going to talk about laptops for all kids. It sounds very ambitious.
It's a big vision, and we're going to find out. It's had some struggles, but it's headed in the right direction.
And we'll have to find out what other people think, and we can say what we think about it, how they can be used. And part of this article is going to be about the new approach. What does it say for the subtitle here?
Well, it says, a new approach helps one organization move toward its vision. So it sounds like a longer vision, but a new idea of how to make that vision a reality.
And that often happens. You start out doing something, and things change, and so then it helps you do even a better job. And I think that's what we're going to talk about in this article, isn't it, Josh?
Yes. When you have a vision, it's almost like you have a dream of accomplishing something, and you don't know exactly how it's going to work out. So oftentimes you learn along the way, and you have to change your approach.
So we're going to start out in a place that's South America or Central America called Nicaragua. We're going to find out about a little girl there. And do you all know where Nicaragua is?
It's in Central America.
Central America, between Mexico and South America, right? And that's where we're going to start out reading about this girl. But then we're going to talk about the whole world and laptops in general. So let's get started by reading the first section through line 15.
Laptops for all kids. A new approach helps one organization move toward its vision. Elisa Fernanda Castillo Cruz, age 6, is a first grader at the Escuela Emmanuel Mongalo in Diriamba, Nicaragua. And she loves her XO computer, better known as the one laptop per child laptop. I bring it home, and I teach my mama and my papa and my little brothers, she says in Spanish. I show them all the activities they don't know, painting, writing, reading, games. She opens her favorite game, in which addition and multiplication problems drift slowly down the small black and white screen. You have to answer before they fall, she says, laughing and hiding her face in her hands when the sad face appears to tell her she got a sum wrong.
There's a lot of words in this paragraph that don't seem like English to me, Josh.
No, it's a little bit of Spanish for us today, but we'll try to just teach you the English.
Okay, so we're talking about a little girl. I'm just going to call her Elisa. It's her first name, 6 years old, and she's a first grader in this place in Nicaragua. And she loves her XO computer. Does anybody know anything about the XO computer?
Well, this is also known as one laptop per child. So this special type of laptop is inexpensive, and the goal is to have one of these laptops for each child.
So they're not expensive. They're cheap computers, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And so she loves hers, of course. All kids seem to like them. Your kids like them, don't they, Josh?
My kids have loved computers since they were 2 years old. Mm-hmm. And they make kids' computers, but they love playing on my computer. Got to have whatever technology daddy's playing with.
Right. Kids do that, don't they? Right.
It amazes me how quickly small children pick up on technology. Whenever I babysit, I always ask the three-year-old how to use a DVD player. They know. I don't know, but they know.
They know how to go and find out what's wrong, why it's not connected and everything. It's
amazing.
What
their password is, where their favorite apps are.
I know. It's interesting. But anyway, she loves this computer. And this is better known as the one laptop per child laptop. Well, that's a big mouthful right there. So that's a OLPC. That means one laptop per child. That's a pretty ambitious thing, though. Kids don't have a lot of money in a lot of these countries. Can you imagine them having their own laptop?
It is pretty ambitious to think that a lot of countries, people live on a dollar a day, which means they can barely make enough to feed themselves, let alone have a computer. And the goals behind computers are learning and getting connected with the world. I'm not sure people in those countries need a computer, but it is a vision of an organization that we're going to learn about in the next few days.
Yes, and on page 18, we're talking about this girl, Lisa, who's only 6 years old. And what does she do with her laptop? What did it say, Lindy? What does she do with that in line 6? It tells us what she does.
It sounds like she becomes a teacher herself. She takes it home to her family and introduces them to different activities on the computer, particularly games.
Right. Well, you know, she teaches her mom and her dad, and that's true with some of you that learn English. You can always practice it at home. And kids, sometimes parents say, I don't want to speak English because it's not very good. They can learn from their kids. Just
sure
like we can learn Chinese when you have little kids, and they learn it, they teach you. Isn't that right, Josh?
That's right.
So there's okay to share it in the family, but she says that hers is in Spanish, and she teaches them things they don't know. Of course they like games. What is her favorite game on there?
Well, her favorite game seems to be a math game in which addition and multiplication problems kind of come across the screen, and she has to type in the sum really quickly before it gets across.
Okay, there's a lot of programs that use that. I remember teaching people typing that way, and the words come down, and you have to hit the word before it hits the bottom. And using games, I think, is a great way to teach anything, don't you?
I do, and it sounds like we learn a little bit about this computer. We says it is very inexpensive and can be mass-produced for kids all over the world. It actually has a very small black-and-white screen, so it's not a color monitor.
Not the kind that you're all looking at yourself right now when you're thinking about it. But still, it's fun for them. And you have to answer before they fall, like you just said there. And she really thinks it's funny when she gets it right or gets it wrong. And that's a good way to learn. Do it with your family, isn't it?
Kids learn when they're having fun. And she sees a little sad face, it says, when she gets a problem wrong, or in this case, a sum, which would be an answer in the addition part of the game.
So what's the main point of having this first section on here? What are they trying to tell us?
Well, they're introducing us to this program, One Laptop Per Child, and that it's out in the world and successful and teaching kids like Elisa in countries like Nicaragua. So it's an organization that we learned from the header that it's had some problems, it's made some changes, and it sounds like, and at least in Elisa's case, it's working.
So the first paragraph, they're trying to kind of like a case study and say, here's a little girl who uses it. Isn't it wonderful? They're trying to sell us on the idea, aren't they?
It's interesting. I think when you've got a vision that big, you want people to be inspired by what it's actually doing. So showing us a picture of a little girl who's using the computer exactly the way it was meant to be used is a very important explanation.
That's right. It's a good way to show us what they actually do. Instead of saying, we supply computers to children, they're giving you an example. And examples are always a good way to get people interested, I think.
I think so, too.
True life stories. So then the second part, they go on to tell you about the vision of this, that this man, Nicholas, who started it, and there's a lot of good English in this, a little complicated. But let's read through that if you would like to. Just read out loud together as we read the next part of our lesson.
A grand vision. This kind of engagement was exactly the goal when Nicholas Negroponte, then the director of MIT's famous media lab, launched the One Laptop Per Child not-for-profit back in 2005. With its Yves Behar-designed Linux-based laptop and a unique open-source programming environment targeted to simple learning, OLPC is the most high-profile example of what's been dubbed Design for the Bottom of the Pyramid, a movement to bring the discipline of design and creative thinking to problems of poverty and development. But Negroponte's grand vision was never matched by an attention to detail. For years, the project failed on many fronts, including production delays, inconsistent support, a lack of teacher training, and a shortage of developers willing to create software for the XO. As a 2010 article in Columbia's Journal of International Affairs concluded, OLPC represents the latest in a long line of technologically utopian development schemes that have unsuccessfully attempted to solve complex social problems with overly simplistic solutions.
Now, after listening to that paragraph, don't turn off the radio and quit for today. Say, that's too much. That's too hard for me. Let's work through it a little bit. It does have some pretty deep thoughts in there.
It does. But like Doris said, let's just break down the sentence line by line. And if there's some words you've never heard before, don't worry. We'll take you through them as best we can and focus on some words that you would like to put in your vocabulary today.
So what's the very beginning of this telling us about this paragraph?
Well, it's referring to what we just read earlier. This kind of engagement, meaning Elisa's interaction with the computer, is exactly the goal that Nicholas Negroponte had when he launched the One Laptop Per Child.
Okay. Now, it says he's the director of MIT's famous Media Lab. Does anybody know anything about that?
Oh, it's a very famous program that works with other companies to create new technologies. And it's somewhat of an innovation hub within the university system.
So that's what his whole life was. That's what he does. So this is what he wanted to share and use for other people. But he wanted to launch this. Everybody should have one of these laptops. And of course, they can't afford it. So it had to be a not for profit. Because if you're going to try to make money off of these poor people, you better just forget it.
That's right. He had a vision of getting computers in every child's hand around the world. And that would need to be done with partners, technology partners, computer makers, software makers, chip makers, all needed to pitch in their efforts. And in order for that to happen, he had to create a not-for-profit organization.
And that started back in 2005, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, now, it tells us a little bit of how he got started here, starting in line 20. Would you like to take the next section, Joanne?
Sure. With its Yves Behar-designed Linux-based laptop and a unique open-source programming environment targeted to simple learning, that's quite a lot of information right there in the beginning of the sentence.
It is.
What it's saying here is, I don't know if any of the listeners have interacted with Linux. It's a sort of PC platform, sort of like Windows or Macintosh. But I think Linux, Josh, correct me if I'm wrong, it's more open source. It's easier for users to tinker and get in there and customize it.
Right, and it's also free. It's free for a laptop to carry that sort of operating system.
You don't have to
system.
Pay any money to use the program.
So. Oh, right. That's perfect for not-for-profit then.
If you're going to use Windows XP, you have to pay Microsoft a license fee.
Well, the thing is, when they started that, we had some programs about that too. This open source programming is good in some ways because everybody can get in and contribute to it. It's kind of like Wikipedia. You can add stuff on there.
Exactly.
And open source was the same way that you can change things and do things. But sometimes that's good, and it could be bad. There's no standard in it, in a sense.
No,
but
not at
in
all.
Fact, it's free, so everybody contribute. Let's do it this way and that way and write their own programs on it and so forth. And so this is the difference. Nowadays, they're still having the differences in these two programs. But this was what was unique, which was very different about this, because it was going to be simple learning, and you couldn't buy a license and all that, so they had to go with open source program. That's why they went with this one at that time.
Right.
But you don't have to remember all that. You don't have to remember all those names. But let's just talk a little bit about OLPC and what it was actually for. What was the reason for that? It says it's the most high-profile example of what's been dubbed as design for the bottom of the pyramid. Let's explain that.
Well, it's the most. When we say something's high-profile, it means it gets a lot of press. And when Mr. Negroponte launched this in 2005, he did receive a ton of press. He was on 60 Minutes. He was on all sorts of news programs saying, can this really be done?
Okay.
Is this really possible? Who's going to partner with you to make this happen?
Okay. And it says here that this has been dubbed. The word being dubbed just means what?
Called something.
It's
giving
called
something
that.
A name.
Yeah, we just called it this. And it was designed for the bottom of the pyramid. Well, let's see. Lindy, do you know anything about the bottom of the pyramid? What does that mean? What's the bottom of the pyramid anyway? What is the pyramid?
I don't know. I guess this is some kind of competitive.
Well, even financially, right? Some people are at the top and some are at the bottom.
Right. We just think of your status in life.
Yeah. Most people are at the bottom. It's a level. And a few people go to the top.
Right.
So it's for all those people at the bottom who really don't have a lot of money and stuff. Isn't that right?
Yes. If you think about the world as a whole and its population, most people are at the bottom as far as money.
Right. Right.
And the middle class, the middle of that pyramid, is usually who we develop products for as an economy. You develop a new line of clothing or a new line of swimwear. You would think you'd want people with money to buy it.
You need people for the top of the pyramid to give you the money. Right?
Exactly. So this is the first time that something this high profile has been designed for the very bottom, for the people in most need around the world.
So if you want to know why he really did this, I like to use a yellow marking pencil. I would certainly underline this next paragraph and line or next sentence because it says it's a movement to bring the discipline of design and creative thinking to the problems of poverty and development. That's a very deep statement. That's what it's designed for. So we have to know why did they do this? How is it done? What is the discipline of design and creative thinking? How can that help poverty and development? Does anybody know? It's kind of a psychological or physiological, some kind of a question.
Well, start with discipline. When we talk about a discipline, it's not punishing someone. It's just about the practice of something, something that you learn, like a vocation, or in this case, an approach to solving a problem.
I think in this case, this is a sort of movement of directing some of our resources, people who practice, like you said, creative thinking and design, instead of thinking about how to design and engineer the latest and greatest high-tech computer, why not take your talents and direct them towards the bottom of the pyramid and see if you can help solve some problems of poverty instead.
Okay. Instead of trying to think of a product that you want to make money on, let's think of a way we can feed all these people we keep seeing go to bed without food at night. Let's use our creativity to solve these problems, creative thinking to solve these problems of poverty and development. How can they develop if they don't have any money, the infrastructure, their countries, their roads, their cities, and all of this? So So his idea was having these computers, helping these kids with their minds and things, will help them develop their countries so their countries will come up to the rest of the world, do you think?
That's right.
Is that what he's saying?
We've been giving aid to so many countries, and it's not working, right? Just giving them more money isn't improving third world countries. So this is coming up with a more creative way of saying, let's get them out of the third world and into the second or first world.
So that was his point. That was his purpose. And that's a good purpose. I mean, nothing
Very
wrong
noble.
With that. Isn't it a good idea?
It sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, but it's not so easy to do. It's kind of like a grand vision. It seems, Xiang, the title is just really thinking it too much, you know? His grand vision was never matched by something that he needed. He didn't really pay much attention to all the details. He had a big vision. Now, visionaries are often this way. They have a lot of ideas, but somebody else has to do them.
Right.
Isn't that right?
Oh, yes. So lots of great visionaries need the detail people around them to execute their vision. And Negroponte didn't have that back in 2005.
He had the heart for it. He had the vision for it. But he didn't know how to make it happen by really the structure of it. Well, it said here some of the things that made the project not really work. It says the project failed. For years it failed on different ways, on many fronts. What were some of the ways it failed, Lindy?
Well, it seems that there were production delays, inconsistent support, a lack of teacher training, shortage of developers.
Okay.
All those contributed to it failing.
Okay, so there's four things. If you want to, you can take your pencil and mark that. The first thing that caused it to fail was production delays. Now, when you have a project, sometimes it goes on for years and it just doesn't get off the ground. They just can't seem to get it done. So you have to have kind of a schedule and work towards it. Isn't that right?
That's right. And if you miss deadlines and things stretch out, you can certainly lose momentum. You can lose the interest of people around the world, maybe his supporters. So people were frustrated by how long it took to get a laptop built.
And then he probably thought a lot of people, they said, I'll help you do this. It's a good idea, all his tech friends. But he had kind of a shortage of developers. They didn't want to create the software that he needed that was simple and black and white.
Well,
they wanted to go on to complicated things.
That's right. Well,
and
part of it was his commitment to that open source environment. He was very focused on it remaining open source, which kept some partners like Microsoft struggling to get involved in this.
Right.
Their own technologies couldn't be a part of the laptop.
Right, because it would be hard to distribute it and figure out it was done right and everything. Yeah. What were some of the other problems that he mentioned here?
Well, there was a lack of teacher training. I know we kind of take it for granted now that we're used to using computers, that we can get onto one that's not familiar to us and still make our way. But if you've never seen or touched a computer before, how can you know how to use it and learn from it?
Right.
So you need to train teachers. You need to train people to go on location and, you know, share the knowledge and spread it.
And we're going to talk about a little of that tomorrow, that wasn't Negroponte's vision for this. He didn't think you needed to set up classes on how to learn this. He literally thought you could just hand this to a child and he'd figure it out.
Yeah. Which was a little bit too simplistic, right?
Yes.
Too visionary, wasn't it? What do you think?
Visionary, but maybe not realistic.
Right, not realistic, not down to earth enough, right? But his heart was in the right place, but In 2010, there was an article in the Columbia Journal of International Affairs. What did they say about it? That's a pretty complicated sentence, Josh.
It is. Well, it starts out, OLPC represents the latest in a long line of technologically utopian development schemes. And
wow.
We'll stop there and break it down.
What are utopian development schemes?
Well, utopia is a perfect society. It's this fantasy land where there's a place with no problems. And when we make it an adjective, it just describes something that is fantasy. It's not a reality.
And there's been a lot of people that had these kind of dreams. I'm going to help the poor people. They'll give food. They'll give them grain to plant, but then there's no rain. And they do all this stuff, but still these people are still hungry. So there's a lot of ideas. This was a technological idea, give them computers, not give them grain,
right.
Not give them water. It was some idea they had. But a lot of those did not really work and is unsuccessfully attempted to solve these very complicated or complex social problems. The social problems are people don't have jobs, they're sick, they're not well, they don't have a place to live. You can't just hand them a laptop and expect to, you know, change all that, right?
No, and we can't hand them money, you can't hand them you know, malaria needles. There are lots of things we've tried to help people, but it's because the situations are so complex. They're so complicated.
I think very often in these socially complex situations, it's not just, you know, like we're saying, they're complex for a reason. It's not just two or three problems that have simple solutions. Lots of times there's economic problems, political problems, development problems, health problems.
Social problems.
Oh, so many things go into making a country third world and unable to develop forward from there. And it's a little bit too, like we were saying, utopian and simplistic to put a computer into the mix and think everything will come back into order.
Well, right. These were overly simplistic solutions. When something is simplistic, that means taijiandan. It's not really going to really solve the problem. Do you think that that's true in a lot of country areas now? As you've traveled around a little bit, Lindy, don't you find that people try to solve these problems, but it's very hard when the people don't have the background? Do you find that?
I think one thing I'm being reminded of a lot is just that saying of you can give a man a fish, or you can teach him how to fish. And I think that's kind of the heart of this whole issue. So he really has to find a better way to implement this vision.
Let's give him another kind of fish right now. His fish was a computer, and the idea was good.
See? It was.
Yeah, but it's not that easy. And we're going to talk about it more, what happened. Now, this was his idea. It didn't really get off the ground and wasn't very successful. But now there's a new approach, and it's going to help them do that more. So this is the first part of it. The second part is we're going to find out what happened. But you have to come to class tomorrow to find out. So tune in tomorrow and find out what happened. We'll see you then.
Goodbye.
Bye.